This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2019, held in Montgomery, Indiana, on March 1 and 2.
Okay, good afternoon. I think we'll begin. Some of you may have read the article titled About Teacher Development in, I think it was in the Calvary Messenger, I'm not actually absolutely positive where it showed up, by Jonathan Erb. I'm going to be reading you a couple pieces or a little bit from his article just to get us started thinking. And there will be times in our discussion and ongoing here that we will pause and give you an opportunity to weigh in on what you do, what has worked for you, what are your thoughts about what we just talked about, and give you time for feedback and interaction. I'm just breaking in here partways down the article. Most of us subscribe to these following ideas, and then here's one. All time and effort spent by both teachers and others in developing teacher effectiveness is time well spent. A new teacher needs to be developed just as surely as a new mason, a seamstress, or a plumber. However, the raw material with which a teacher works is far more valuable than sand and stone, fabric and zippers, or pipes and valves. It is necessary, then, to develop teachers, both the new and the more experienced, so that they can be effective in proper expectations about student success, in 2, managing the classroom well, and 3, designing and teaching the lessons for the ultimate goal of mastery, lesson mastery. To fail in any one of these 3 areas is to fail as a teacher, no matter how willing the mind or consecrated the spirit. Being a willing, consecrated servant of God and the church seems to have become the main criteria for hiring a new teacher. While not minimizing these noble qualities, we must believe far more than this is necessary for our schools to truly thrive. You follow what he's saying there? If the main idea is that she or he is a faithful member of the church, a consecrated servant of God, then that's notable and worthwhile. It's a fair consideration, but there's far more than this necessary for our schools to truly thrive. Unlike the apprentice in the trades, we have developed by default the tradition of finding that willing person, sending them to a brief teacher or school conference, and then giving them full responsibility in a real classroom. These aspiring teachers, may God richly bless them, are expected to perform satisfactorily and successfully immediately. The brows of boards and parents furrow when the new teacher struggles to maintain discipline, teach classroom procedures and routines, keep multiple school records, practice invitational behavior at all times, and identify and deal proactively with non-supportive, energy-draining students, co-teachers, parents, and an occasional board member. The rookie is subconsciously expected to perform these tasks as responsibly and effectively as the well-seasoned teacher on the staff. Perhaps we would not say so outright, but our patience is not very long-winded when it is our own children getting the short end of teacher inexperience. So far for that. Thank you, Jonathan, for sharing that with us and allowing me to read it. So one of the things that Jonathan said at the outset of the article is that far too many of our teachers experience the sink or swim idea, you know, and so I thought about that a little bit, and I'll let you look at this and, you know, just consider what may be the subliminal messages that are coming through this diagram here. I mean, what might we take from this, unspoken? I just considered a little bit, you know, what's the position of the board member? What's the position of the board? Is he engaged in the same struggle that the teacher is? Just throwing him a book, sending him to a teacher training maybe, you know, 2 or 3 days or 3 or 4 days. Is he down in the mire with him? Sink or swim. So I have some questions here. Who trains your teachers? Who trains your teachers? Is it experience, which is ultimately the students, really? Or are they skilled, trusted mentors? Which is the lesser of two evils, the greater a problem? To have no teacher or to have an incompetent one? Really think about that one before you answer it, okay? Think about that carefully. I had a school board member call me several years ago and said, you know, we're considering letting this teacher go because she's just not competent. She's not able to do it, you know. But we had to hire somebody. We knew that she was on the border. You know, we weren't sure that she would work. But we had to hire somebody, you know. And this question came to my mind right then and there. Well, would it be worse to have an incompetent teacher or a no teacher at all? Which would be the greater problem? Really, consider it well. Consider it carefully before you can. What are the long-lasting consequences, the long-term consequences of having an incompetent, untrained, unskilled teacher versus no teacher at all? Is your teacher development program intentional or haphazard? And four, are your teachers forced to initiate their own ongoing development, or do they operate on your plan? Many of us are involved in trades or occupations. We benefit from apprenticeships and mentor-mentee arrangements, and whether farmers or shopkeepers or builders, we find it helpful to attend trade shows and informational meetings and seminars or whatever to keep up with things or to stay on the cutting edge. I suppose we'd have a lot less teacher burnout or quit out if they also had similar opportunities to keep up with things or to stay on the cutting edge of their profession. School boards play a critical role in seeing to it that these teachers have that opportunity. Developing your staff is a board assignment. It is one of your assignments to develop your staff. I want to consider potential staff, that is, candidates for teaching this fall. What are some things we can do to develop their skills, get them ready to teach? First thing I want to mention is to hire early enough that there is plenty of time for development. Hire early enough. I mean, you know, asking them to teach in April is not giving very much time for development. And so the earlier you can secure your teachers for the following year, the more time you're going to have to develop their skills and talents and to discern what their interests are and shore up the things that they're maybe, the subjects maybe that they're weak in, et cetera. B would be references and interviews if you don't know the teacher very well. That is one way of actually developing your staff is by you getting to know them. If you don't know them very well, be sure you have plenty of good references from qualified sources, by the way, not where they're stacked one way, but just try to get qualified sources for the references. And then interview the teacher, too, if you don't know her or him very well. That goes a long ways in developing their skills, is if you know them and they know you before they actually step foot in their classroom or into your community. And then advanced training and development would be another way that we can help develop staff for this fall, for the next term. Some of the week-long events that I'm aware of, and I'm open to your thoughts too if there's other week-long events, would be like Hope Teachers Institute. I think it's week-long, right? Christian Light Teacher Training, and you can find the teacher training brochure in the Christian Light room there through the double doors for this next year, this next term. Western Fellowship Teachers Institute, Faith Builders Teachers Week. I think there's a slide on that too. Yes. Faith Builders Teachers Week would be another area, a week-long event that you can send your teachers to, the ones that you're securing for this fall. And then other more intensive preparation would be things like hire them in advance so that they can attend the summer term at Faith Builders. The teacher apprenticing term at Faith Builders. That would be like a two-year course, teacher apprenticing. And there's 2 years of study, August to May, in a one-week summer term, usually in August there. And that would be the Faith Builders Teachers Week. That would follow with Faith Builders Teachers Week. So summer term is available as well. Courses for enrichment and development is what Faith Builders offers through the summer term. They also have administrators conference and retreat and teachers conferences as well. See Faith Builders for more information on some of those things like that. So, and then you can do things, you have your teachers, they may even opt to do things in the interim when they're waiting to begin their teaching career in your community, in your school. Take enrichment courses in a local community college or online courses or computer courses in their various areas. There was a young man that we watched him grow up, really, and I didn't think he was very grown up when another community actually asked him to teach in their school. And I was kind of surprised. You know, what do they see in him that I haven't seen? You know, I've been involved in schools for so many years, and I should have seen that he's a teacher, if he is, if he could be. But I was really impressed when after he was hired and after he was interviewed by the other school, I was really impressed how diligently he began to prepare for that assignment. He knew that his weakness would be English. And so he bought an English handbook. He studied English literature. He went all out to shore himself up on English because he knew that's where his weakness would be. I mean, he had a working knowledge of nouns and verbs, but not much more than that. And then he was expected to teach a high school English course. So he really had to really develop himself fast. But in that kind of thing, you want to take that kind of ambition and build on it. And give them the courses and the resources that can work. So what are things that you require from your teachers that are preparing to teach at your school this next term if they haven't been teaching before? Do you require anything special, any expectations you'd like to share with the group? Main thing is just don't dump them into your classroom, you know, without any expectations, without getting to know you and the people in your classroom, and then all their training will be by student experience. that's where the training begins and happens, is experience by on the ground. Boots on the ground is a way to gain experience. Boots on the ground is a way to gain proficiency, but it's a slow way, and it's often a burnout way too. It's a way to burn the teacher out. So if you give some preparation and give them a chance to develop some things and put some tools in their bag and get them ready for the challenges and the rigors of teaching rowdy students, it is to their advantage and to your school advantage as well for the long term, not only for this next term, but possibly for the long term. Give them an opportunity to develop their skills. All right, the next area we want to look at is future staff, developing future staff, like a 10-year outlook, okay? And I'm not going to say much about the role of the church in this, except just to say that if church leaders can value and prize the gift and the skills of teaching, the ability of teachers, God has distributed to some the gift of teaching. And church leaders don't need to be threatened by this at all, but they need to actually utilize it and bring it to bear on the good of the church, because that's why God has placed it there. God has placed the gift of teaching in the church. And it's not necessarily that only the ordained need to preach and teach, but perhaps teachers should be given a greater role. The gift of teaching should be given a greater role in the church. And if we can prize and value it in that way, perhaps we'll be starting to sprout more teachers from our churches. It just comes into the school. If we can value and prize it in that way, where we value and prize the gift of teaching. Don't be threatened by it. Make room for it. The gift of teaching is probably one of the most unutilized gifts in the church. Okay, B, visionary school boards and staff looking ahead. Okay, now developing, looking ahead for and preparing future teachers. I encourage you to start watching the sixth graders. Start watching the sixth graders. This is when they're beginning to blossom, when their real character, when their real personality is beginning to take form, especially the girls by that time. Maybe seventh graders for the boys. I'm not sure how all that works, but place a lot of value on, make observations. Make observations and start talking to your staff, especially your experienced staff, about what do you think of this young man or this young lady, what do you think her gifts or what do you think her abilities might be in the future? Develop those gifts and skills. Place a lot of value on making outlines and giving speeches and articulation, creative expression and people skills. All those things are very important for effective teachers. So, What do you look for as school boards? If you've got that 10-year outlook, okay, and you're starting to look in your sixth graders, your seventh graders, possibly for future teachers, developing them, what do you look for? Well, I want to just encourage you to think this way. Don't necessarily look for the top students academically. I mean, they probably are not going to make you your best teachers generally. The top students are not going to be your best teachers in a general way. That's kind of a blanket statement. But grit and gumption should be valued as much as intelligence. Grit and gumption, they're putting their shoulder to the wheel and giving it their best, engaging their minds and learning those study habits and the rigors of teaching, the rigors of learning, and not being deterred by hard work. They will often make you the best teachers, the students that have to work hard. The best teachers often come from hard places. So, is it your goal to grow your own teachers? You need teachers. Sprout your own. Sprout your own teachers. Organic and homegrown teachers are the best. Give them opportunities, the ones that might have the gift. Give them opportunities to do some student teaching. Set them up for failure. Go ahead and take a risk. Assign topics and devotions. Assign student devotions. Assign topics. Assign research. Assign study skills. Be intentional about creating teachers, developing teachers by valuing and prizing the skills that will make them a teacher. Okay, so that's long-term staff. Do you have ideas on how to develop future staff? What are you doing? Is it a good idea to grow your own? Do you agree with the statement that they are the best? The homegrown are the best? How can we do it? What are your thoughts? I value your input. I've personally been struggling with this one a little bit, because how do you put this vision or this idea into actual shoe leather that, you know, hey, we're going to have a waiting list for teachers waiting to teach our school, you know, and we're growing them. We have them in the hothouse there in the greenhouse sprouting now, you know, and how do you develop a program, or what are your thoughts on that? How can we maximize that potential that is within our own congregations?
So if we can find out, if that's important, even for the pastors or for the church, if that is valuable, maybe if you're from a community where it hasn't been, it's just a necessary evil.
That's.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. One of the better report cards that you can get for your teaching program is when sixth grade girls are saying that I want to be a teacher when I grow up. You know, that's when they put down on their what's your life ambition? Teacher, teacher, teacher. You know, that's great. That's great. Maximize on it. Don't let that slip under. Okay, and we need to model the way for them too. That's the challenging part. Okay, more thoughts? Yes, Jonathan.
The use of the study lanes. In other words, having students grade to grade, they can study together. I was a scholar, I was considered a bad thing. So, of course, that's why I entered school as a teacher. The more that I taught, the more I changed.
Right. Yeah. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. Thank you. It's great. Yes. Was that a question?
Yeah.
Okay. You say, is there a danger in that? Should we? Okay. Okay, so should we raise the bar extra high so they don't think it's too easy to become a teacher? Is that what your question was? Okay, yes. Well, I think one of the key factors in instilling that desire to teach is to have your teachers be joyful in their teaching. To be enjoying it and to be, I mean, it's not an easy job. No, it never will be easy, and we need to actually be able to demonstrate. And that's the one thing I teach teachers sometimes too is don't hesitate too much to let the students know that you had to really study and work on this concept yourself. They understand that you stayed. It's okay to let them know that you stayed up till 10 o'clock last night grading papers. The teachers need to sometimes actually let students know that it is hard work. It's not just an easy job, and those that can't work a regular job teach, you know. It's not the issue at all. I don't think we need to make it unrealistically high, but we do need to give them the proper view of the job, give them that viewpoint and persuasion. One thing that some schools do, and I appreciate this, and I laud it, is the idea of teacher training courses for a high school, like a high school half credit or whole credit. You could do that with different materials you can have and do some student teaching. They get a high school credit or a half credit for the amount of time that they do in the classroom and actual work, and as well as working through books. Principles of Teaching and various books like that and courses that follow it. And there's been schools that says, well, we don't do high school here, so with seventh and eighth graders, could they do that? Well, yes, they probably could too. Some of them could probably do that. Nurture it by developing the materials or giving them the materials that will, and structure a program in such a way that you can actually expect some sprouts, some teacher sprouts. Okay. Let's move on now. This is the main emphasis, though, is developing your present staff. Roman numeral number 3, developing present staff. Staff meetings. staff meetings can be enrichment times, and this is something that I just enjoyed very much. And I still have this recurring dream. I don't know how often it is, but several times a year, I still dream that I forgot to have staff meeting Tuesday evening. You know, I just keep forgetting it, and I tell the teachers, I'm sorry, I forgot it again, and we'll have it next week on Tuesday. And then, you know, in my dream, we forget it again. You know, and I think part of it is, and I've asked the Lord and asked myself, you know, why does this dream keep coming back to me? And I guess it's because I'm supposed to tell y'all that staff meetings are important. And I'm not sure, but staff meetings can be enrichment times. One of the best memories I have of staff meetings when I was principal and teaching was reading through a book as a staff. We'd read a book, we made it maybe a chapter a week, each one of us read a chapter a week, or maybe we'd read it as a devotional kind of for our staff meeting, and then we'd discuss it. The Master Teacher, for example, Rod Staff's book, The Master Teacher, and other books that you can read for staff development and developing skills. Staff meetings can also be a great time to discuss methodology and how do you handle this, and what would you recommend for my student here? And it also builds camaraderie. And you know what? Iron sharpens iron. Iron sharpens iron. You just blend together and work as a team. You will all develop together. Staff meetings. So, and critiquing one another. Develop a culture in your school that teachers really want to be critiqued. They really want to be evaluated. There are forms. There are ways that you can do this, and develop that culture where teachers actually desire it. And a good teacher that wants to improve his or her skills will actually welcome critique. Take advantage of it. Make sure it happens. And that's where we go with the next section there, regular evaluations and school visits. There are forms available. You can ask your CLE rep or anybody else that's in an experienced situation for forms that you can actually evaluate teachers, a classroom evaluation form, various things like that. This should come, though, from an experienced teacher, someone that has experience in that area. Or maybe even from outside the school, if your school doesn't have an experienced teacher that can provide that. And then give helpful feedback and suggestions for improvement after a school visit and an evaluation. And then don't forget to affirm and appreciate as well as show out the areas of weakness that they need to improve on. Affirmation and approval, appreciation, go a long ways in developing teacher skills. When you can show them you're doing that very well, you know what is the question that comes to the teacher's mind right away? I wonder what areas I'm not doing very well in, okay? I mean, they'll appreciate you saying that, but they will also wonder, I wonder what areas he didn't say that I'm doing well in, okay? So you just affirm and appreciate, and then it will help to bring about an air or an atmosphere of desiring improvement. See? Schedule 3 to 5 days per term for in-service training. And I'm suggesting that you actually build this into your calendar, though you have enough school days left after those 3 to 5 days that they can still get through their courses and get through their classes in the term. And here's a few of the seminars or institutes or workshops that I am aware of, and I'm open to your ideas for others as well. Southeastern Educator Seminar in Georgia, Hartwell, Georgia, is every February. That one started, I think, 25, 30 years ago, and is still going strong. The Virginia School Institute, I think that one you just had that a couple weeks ago, I think, right? Somebody from Virginia? I think that's February, right? It's in February sometime, yes. I remember attending those when I used to teach in Catlett, Virginia. I used to attend some of those. Texas Teacher Conference is a new and growing one. I say new, I think it's 8-9 years old. It's a new and growing one, and that Texas teachers, it means Texas and surrounding states, all right? And as far as you want to go, really, it's open for everyone. That's always the last Thursday and Friday in January. The CLE workshops are in October and November. That's a traveling workshop. Experienced educators going around to various communities and areas giving workshops. And you don't have to be using CLE to come, really. Honestly, that's not the case. This is for anyone and anyone interested in teacher development. Then you have CMTI, Conservative Mennonite Teachers Institute, usually held in September, one in the east and one in the west, except west doesn't come that far west, really. So you have that, they have that as well. That's a big, big group. And then there's, I'm sure, other regional meetings or perhaps church group, church-affiliated group meetings as well. Do you know of any others that you would like to suggest that could be useful for teachers to go to? Okay, but just be aware of it that there's more available than there used to be, okay? There's a lot more places you can go than there used to be. And there are some schools that kind of take the attitude that, well, you know, we can't afford to take off so much, you know? But I'm saying if you really are concerned about developing your teachers and giving them enough respite time that they can actually develop skills and refresh and revive, I mean, some of these workshops and some of these meetings like this are essentially revival meetings. I mean, it's teacher revival meetings is what they are. And it gives them a boost in their energy and brings them back with lots of ideas, and they're brimming over. And that's why I say allow 3 to 5 days in your schedule for this kind of thing. Another thing that some schools do is visit other schools as well. That can be an enriching time. And some schools go as far as actually swapping teachers for a day. You know, swapping teachers into schools just for a day, just to experience new things and stretch them, various things like that. I'm not sure that I'd recommend that one, but that is what a few schools that I know of have done. Now, visiting other schools is a way to sharpen your iron, sharpen the teacher's iron. And then the summer development opportunities. Several years ago, I had a school board chairman call me and ask me, just what do you think of this idea? He said, we're considering beginning to pay our teachers through the summer if they commit to teaching next year, okay? And we're just gonna pay them right on through the summer. What do you think of that idea? And I said, I think it's a great idea, but, you know, and then he went on to explain, oh, but they're also expected to do something to improve their skills during the summer. They're teaching skills during the summer. For example, they might have to go to summer term at Faith Builders. They might have to, you know, attend a week of teacher training somewhere again, just as alumni, go back and do it again, you know, and take it over. Or maybe do required reading with book reports, you know. We're gonna require things like that. Research projects with term papers. For example, Menno Simons' view on education. It's an interesting study. What did Menno Simons have to say about education? Or later, how did John Amos Comenius influence our education today? You know, and your teachers can they can broaden their worldview and their experience and become alive during the summer. And you can't hardly wait to get back in the classroom again. You know, so develop the summers. If you can do this, it'd be great. Take classes. You can ask them to take classes and maybe attend a seminar somewhere like that. Video or computer courses and online courses or something like that could possibly be useful in some situations. Travel study. This is something that I'm kind of excited about. I see more and more teachers doing this during the summer, is that they don't just go get a job to supplement their wages. You know, they don't just go work really hard and wear themselves out all summer so they can teach for the rest of the fall the rest of the term, okay? But they do travel, but that's because they're being paid, you know, right on during the summer. But it's structured in such a way with an agreement with the school board that it's going to work for the school's benefit, not just that they're taking on vacation. So teachers are going to, some of the teachers from that school, that school board chairman that called me and asked me what I think about those ideas, some of their teachers would go to work in refugee camps for the summer, you know, over in Greece or something like that. They'd write articles about it when they come back and just various things like that, and they've been very involved and engaged. And guess what? their classrooms are better for it when they come back. Their classrooms are better for it because they have a broader experience now, and they can teach social studies like never before, you know? Or, you know, when they learn another language or something like that. Yeah, that's another thing. Take a foreign language course. Have your teachers take a foreign language course during the summer. Maybe you can have that person be your high school teacher someday for a foreign language course in French. But if you do this, if you do pay your teachers during the summer, then you do, I think, also have a little right to also specify what kinds of things they should be doing. And not only a right, perhaps a responsibility, if that's the case. E, assign a mentor to young or beginning teachers. That is powerful. Young or beginning teachers need a mentor. You need to have someone assigned with them to walk through them, to give them a daily phone call or a weekly phone call, whatever the need is. Just give a weekly phone call or work with them for a day every week. Just mentor them through. That's one of the things I valued in my first year of teaching. I was acting principal. I was actually assistant principal, but I was working underneath a principal who was going back to school to take on more courses so he could teach more proficiently. And he would still come back and conduct our staff meetings. He would come back and do our evaluations. He would help us to develop our skills. And I valued that very highly. F, we've already mentioned that. G, provide stimulating periodicals and resources. The Christian School Builder by Rod and Staff, Blackboard Bulletin by Pathway, Light Lines, which is a free publication from Christian Light. And you can sign up for them over there if you'd like some. ACSI has periodicals if your school is a member of ACSI, Association of Christian Schools International. If your school is a member of that, you can get their periodicals free. And there's more. There will be lots more that you can get. So keep good reading materials in front of them, including articles that you cut out of the Wall Street Journal or whatever you're reading that might be helpful or stimulating for their development. H, maximize achievement tests by using them partly as teacher scorecards. When you do an achievement test, a standardized achievement test, you can, and I'm not saying to do it absolutely, please don't. I mean, don't this is not the only indicator of student teacher performance, please understand. But it can give you a snapshot into how the teachers are doing. Like, what happened this year? You know, why this big drop in this class? They're underperforming from the previous years, and why? You know, and maybe in this area or maybe in this subject material, you can evaluate. If you understand and can interpret and read achievement test results, it can give you a snapshot into teacher performance as well as student performance. And then I want to mention this one too. Keep this in front of your teachers if you're available and you can use this in your community. Is the docforlearning.org. This is a home page right now. As far as yesterday was concerned, I think this is a home page. You see, there's a lot of material on there, and a lot of questions can be asked, a lot of forums and discussions and things like that. I think you'll hear more of that tomorrow. Okay, your thoughts. How do you promote staff development? Any additional ideas? Yes, back here. Okay. Okay. All right, that you're saying helping someone at FB or somewhere else? Yes. Okay, okay. Sure. Sure, sure. Yeah, again, there you have the long view. You're having a long view and you're developing teachers or working toward developing teachers for the long term. You know, so if you're constantly putting out this fire every summer, you're struggling with getting teachers, and yeah, your school is on shaky ground. So we need to really look farther ahead and work toward that. Yeah, that's a great idea. Thank you. Any other ideas? Yes, back here. Like a teacher aide, teacher assistants. Okay. Have any of you tried that? How does it work? I mean, they're not old enough yet for the full responsibility, but they can come in and assist and support. Yeah, that's a great idea. Yes. Okay. Right. We did too. I think in the one school where I taught, we had them keep track of the hours that they spent in student teaching and assisting. They were able to actually get a high school credit for it eventually if they had enough hours. Yeah, but that's great. Again, we don't want to give the full responsibility to someone that is too young, but if they can be mentored and guided in an assistant way like that, that's excellent. If they're in good company, that's the key point. If they're in good company. If they're coming in and helping a struggling teacher teach, that's probably not a good idea. Okay, any other ideas? Okay, a couple of thoughts here toward the end, a few thoughts here toward the end now. Some concepts that are critical to staff development. Keeping good staff provides stability and opportunity for mentoring. Okay, remember, keeping good staff provides stability and opportunity for mentoring younger and inexperienced people. B, aim for something. Develop and write out a long-term goal. This is talking about vision, of course, but because if you aim at nothing, you're sure to hit it. But bullets will always go in the direction the gun is aimed, all right? It'll at least go in the direction that it'll go. So be sure you aim at something. Have a goal. Write it out. Discuss it. Write it out. Know what you're looking for. What is the end product we're driving for? What do we really want to see in our schools? Why is teacher development important to us? What do we want to see? Part of this is maybe even having a help wanted ad in your mind always. You know, what are the qualifications for teachers? What do we really want to see? And do we always need to hire novices? Can we make an offer to a teacher that's experienced already in another school? Are we capable of doing that? Do we have the experience and the means to do that? That we always have to, we always hire novices instead. These qualifications required, that help wanted ad in your mind. All right, C, your school's philosophy about excellence and teaching is on display. If you can develop a culture that surrounds your school where teachers know and understand that you have to perform to work here, it will go a long ways in switching the culture or moving the culture to where teachers will want to teach at your school, where they will want to come. They will suggest coming to your school. If you can switch it, that they actually have to perform to get there. One of the reasons for that is because human beings, men especially, are up to challenges. We like to be challenged. We like to develop our skills, all right? And that's inherent in anybody that is thinking sanely, I think, as far as teaching is concerned. So you got to perform to work here. Also remember to pay for what you get, because you get what you pay for. Pay for what you get, because you get what you pay for. We need to remember that as well. Part of your philosophy about education has to do with qualified board members as well. Qualified board members, board members that are engaged, active, and involved with school and teachers and development and things like that. I mean, you may not have all the answers. You may not know exactly how everything should be done because you've never had classroom experience yourself. However, you've got an idea in your mind of what teacher proficiency looks like. You do. God has given you the wisdom and the assignment to be able to do that. Boards, you're responsible to guide the teachers in that way. So qualified board members that think and think this way. D, teachers teach best out of freshness. The best teachers are learning teachers. So give them things to learn. Provide for that. And I'll just go through the last few here in just a little bit now. Just because a person is friendly, outgoing, articulate, loves God and loves children doesn't mean they'll be a good teacher necessarily. Be sure you understand what the qualifications should be before hiring a teacher. F, schools that employ novices year after year are usually unstable. Definition of a novice is a person new to or inexperienced in a field. A bishop should not be a novice according to 1 Timothy 3:16. Don't the teachers in our schools have just as much impact on the church as the bishops? And G, recognize and affirm the desire of the teachers to get better at what they do and make room for improvement and honing of skills. They also need to be masters at their trade. And then you have the quote by Dr. Howard Hendricks. Thank you for participating. God bless you as you work towards staff development, building up the body of Christ.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.